On this week's show, fire up that old school gaming console because we're traveling back in time, courtesy of MegaCat Studios, to talk about Haunted Halloween 86, a must-have title for any NES owner. Speaking of classic gaming, the Blaster Master and Bubble Bobble series continue to show us how to handle a retro revival, while Street Fighter just wants you to shut up and give it more money. And finally, the Hype Zone gives us 195,000 reasons to catch them all. This is Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 123. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 123 for the week of October 28th, 2019, sponsored by MeltedPins.com. I hear a lot of feedback. I'm getting a lot of me.
Is that you? Is your shit all fucked up?
No, it's not me.
I'm on my phone, but I don't even have a headset here.
Oh, no headset. Oh, my God. What are we doing?
I'm flipped upside down in the baby world here, man. There's not much I can do.
Jeez.
There's really no laws at this point. I'm just a man in a phone.
And that voice is James.
Yes. Welcome, everybody. I am Stephen Fontana. With me is Andy Hassamakis and James, as mentioned in our... Well, I guess I didn't say his name. I only said MegaCat, right? Okay. Well, James Deegan is here. Newly minted papa. Proud papa. How you doing, guys? How's everything going?
Not bad for a Sunday evening.
I mean, yeah. for a headsetless guy, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, this is. I mean, was it you who had the really obnoxious smoke alarm going off the first time?
I would say, generally speaking, that's me, but I can't really confirm or deny.
I believe you needed a really long ladder that you didn't own, something like that. I don't know.
Well, way back, that's true. So what it was is we had just installed the automated like Nest home security fire things, and it was just basically turned on me and was ruining my life. So we worked it out. Actually, I have a great blog I put up about it for people that need troubleshooting. You can't just put any AA battery in it. You had to have a specific standard and a few brands that otherwise the brand new batteries would still forever beep.
Wow. Look at that. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, I recall the listener saying that we shouldn't have done the interview.
Yeah, there was one, right? There was one. One was like I would have hung up.
You should have asked him just to leave.
You know what? We got this. We'll just talk about your game. You don't need your input.
Good.
We good. All right. So for those of you that are new to Nintendo Dual Screens podcast, this is an interview show where Andy and I bring on an industry guest to talk about the indies and Nintendo's past, present, and future. James has been on the show before. You can listen to that episode. It was all about Coffee Crisis. That was the first time we met James. And then since then, we have done a print or text interview or whatever, however the hell you call it, on Dual Screens. We've also hung out pretty much all of PAX East this year, which we're hoping to do again next year. Hint, hint, wink, wink. But James is a really fun guest, and he's got some really fun games that they've been working on. So he's back over here to celebrate All Hallows Eve month that we are doing here, the month of horror. Remember, folks, Nintendo Dual Screens posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And of course, you could find everything we do on dualscreens.com. Please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts if that is your service of choice, because it helps us out tremendously. You can also support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/NDSPodcast, just like our Patreon producer. He's back to demigod. He is Alex Gonzalez. Thank you very much, Alex, and congratulations on kicking consistent butt in Mortal Kombat 11 and achieving demigod status. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support, so please head over to patreon.com/NDSPodcast, where you can support us for as little as $1. What does that $1 get them, Andy?
It gets you super secret access to our super secret Discord group,
That's
and
right.
also bonus content every month.
every single month. You get a bonus show, which you vote the topic. Look at that. All the power's in your hands. All right. Well, that's the rigmarole. I'm done with that. So before we get into the lead story, before we get into the Nintendo news report, it is time for, and this segment might not have been around the first time you were on here, James, but there was something like it, but it's gotten so much better, and it's everybody's favorite segment. It is, of course, the Nindies of the Week! The Nindies of the Week. Andy?
That's everyone's favorite segment?
No.
Because that's the first thing we do on the show.
Right.
That's not a good look for us.
No, it's people like that I yell it, but that's about it. That's where it ends, essentially.
Well, I originally had Haunted on my list, but we're talking about it today on the podcast, so I did choose another game I was playing recently, which was released on the Switch not too long ago, Remothered Tormented Fathers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, it's basically a Clock Tower homage, more or less. It began as a Clock Tower.
What is happening with James's? What is happening over there?
The baby's eating his phone.
Honestly, that was very close to the reality. I like to consider it kind of like a little more hands-on than the standard.
This is a two for one interview, ladies and gentlemen.
Can we go back to the days of your fire alarm going off? Five minutes?
You know, I was just thinking, how do I bring it to the next level?
This is
if the baby throws up on you during the podcast.
This is Blair Witch, but for audio. That's what's happening here.
I actually have a great story about that, but we'll get to that later.
Before the kid shits on you. Okay, so I've been playing Remothered, Tormented Fathers, which was it began as a Clock Tower sort of remake, reimagining, like a fan game years ago, and this one guy, Chris Darrell, was like, I'm an awesome artist. Why am I going to waste this on a fan game? So he took the idea, which was like a 2D point and click, and made it a full blown like 3D game, like an action game. Well, action, like, you know, like a 3D world game. So it's like very like hide and seek game, like Clock Tower. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it's actually a very good horror game. Like, it will scare you.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm all about Cat Quest 2. Been playing that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's way, way bigger than the first one. Like, way bigger. It's just, I would say it's probably twice the size. But, yeah, it's very cute. It's fun bouncing between the two characters. If you don't know what it is, it's essentially an open, you know, semi-open world action RPG. They say open world, but it's really not, because you're kind of walled off to where you can go based on your level. You could still go there and try to fight things way over your level, but you're going to end up getting your ass kicked. And there's only so many different characters that actually give you side quests, but what you are doing is super fun. There's a little bit more dungeon variety than there used to be. This is like different types of stuff. Like there are some dungeons now that have trials, so you go in and it's like clear the waves and then you get the treasure. Which are cool, but the writing there, Andy, Desmond was not kidding when he said there are way more puns in this game, because almost every single line has a pun.
Yeah, because when you make one game, there's like 1,000 puns on the cutting room floor you didn't use the first time around.
Right.
We use all these old ones and all these new ones you made in the last over the last 2 years.
And now they have dogs.
And, yeah, of course. And, you know, punny about. Puns are easy with cats. It's like almost annoyingly easy. The cat budget.
So yeah, like the whole story, I guess, is that you're playing this like reincarnated, the two reincarnated kings, like one of the cat kingdom and one of the dog kingdom, and like there's some sort of mysterious force that has essentially made it so that the cats think the dogs are attacking and the dogs think the cats are attacking, so they're at war now, and you're kind of caught in the middle, and it's pretty cool. But yeah, it's very cute. James has been making games and keeping a human alive. So I don't know, James, have you been playing any indies lately?
Yeah, let's see. So I want to say that I've really been enjoying, across like the homebrew community, some of the new NES stuff out there, which leads pretty well into what, we just got announcing, but have you guys seen the, NES Scape?
I don't think so.
So it was a Kickstarter a few months ago. I think it shipped in the last two or three. I finally got around to playing it, and it's a an escape room NES game.
Oh, wait. I think I did see this. I don't know where I would have, though.
It's definitely okay. It makes for a nice, like, quick, fun, like, hands-on, you know, retro-style, truly experience. And it does have a couple unique things, with it being the only one like that for the NES. It kind of did some things I think can be appreciated by anyone who's into retro.
What are you trying? Okay, so you have to escape the NES game, yeah, but like what's...
So, you know, it's kind of like, I always look at like puzzle games as my favorite type of game when I want to have a break from playing a game.
Okay.
You know, it's like I can turn a puzzle game on after I've been crushed with work and still have, you know, an easy, fun time without feeling like I have to be up to the reaction time of pressure with a fighting game or like a super RPG. So it's kind of like a passive way to kick back, relax, and enjoy, you know, whatever console it's on. So I happen to love puzzle games in general. And with it being NES focused, I couldn't help but pick it up and give it a go.
Awesome. And what is it on? Did you mention that already? I'm sorry.
Yeah, NES.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it looks really neat. Okay, cool. It's a dope ass cartridge. It's all blue and shit, and like see through.
Ooh,
yeah.
It's fun. I'll make sure. Whenever we link up at PAX East, I'll bring my copy. You guys can take it for a ride.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I'm due to ship a box to Steven, so I can include it in there too.
Oh yeah. I still have. Where did Coffee Quest end up? Because it was. I had Coffee Quest. See, I said it again, Andy. Coffee Crisis.
You're the worst.
I had it next to my coffee maker for quite a while. But my wife vetoed that, so I don't know where it wound up. Eventually. I had it there for about a month, so I snuck it by pretty good. All right, so that is what we've been playing, but what could we be playing? And that, of course, brings us to the releases of the week, and we're just going to go through these as quickly as possible. This, of course, comes from Nintendo.com's own coming soon section, so if it's not listed here, it's because they didn't put it on their website. So we have Door Kickers Action Squad coming out this week. That game looks like a lot of fun. Xenocrisis.
That's like an old school Genesis game looking thing.
Yeah, that does look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thoth, I guess. Or T-Hot-H. I don't know what that is. Okay. Polyroll is coming out this week. Also, Super Monkey Ball Banana Blitz HD is coming out on the 29th. Earthfall Alien Horde. So there you go. You got some alien killing action there. Harvest Moon Mad Dash. That looks like it's going to anger a lot of Harvest Moon fans. Vampire. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, Vampire with the Y. Yeah, that is coming out. Yep. That is coming out on the 29th. Dusk Diver is coming out on the 29th as well. Also on the 29th is the Disney Classic Games Aladdin and the Lion King. So there you got that. Then Capcom decided that we need Resident Evil 5 and 6 again, so that's coming out separately, of course. Altair, Ryza, Ever Darkness, and The Secret Hideout.
That's a fucking title.
Disgaea 4 Complete Plus. Disgaea games are pretty good. Spaceland. That game looks cool. I want to open that up. It looks like it's got some charm to it. Ooh, isometric. Ooh. Is it a puzzle? Looks like it might have puzzle elements. Is that turn-based? Ah, a dynamic turn-based strategy game. Okay, that looks cool. Mononoke... Slash Down. No, did I skip something? I did. Sky Gamblers, Storm Raiders 2, Yuri, Flan, The Big Journey, Luigi's Mansion 3, Ghost Parade.
Just gloss over Luigi's Mansion 3. Luigi's Mansion 3, like it's fucking nothing.
No, I mean, we're gonna, yeah. Luigi's Mansion 3 is coming out on Halloween. We knew that. Otoko Mitsu.
Mm-hmm.
And Agony. That rounds out. Oh, no. We also have stuff on the first. Oh, my God. Yeah. Please.
Keep going. There's like 20 more games.
Perseverance.
Persevere, Steven. Keep going.
Yeah. Race with Ryan. Oh no, he's got a game now.
Is he a YouTuber? Oh, who is he?
Yeah, it's the Ryan's Toy Review.
Oh, fuck that kid.
Hey, isn't he under your umbrella?
Is he
a Nickelodeon kid? I think he is.
Oh, whatever.
I think he is. Spirit Roots, Windmill Kings. This is the, and that's it. That's it. That's the done. End of it. Okay, good.
That's all of it.
We did it. Holy shit,
we're
that's
over.
A week.
We're over.
Man, a lot of games. A lot of games if you're a Nintendo Switch owner and you have an unlimited income. I don't. But let's talk about Haunted, Halloween 86, the year I was born, 1986, what, represent. James, man, so you're here, you're back, you're doing some things, and Andy, we had no idea that Mega Cat handled this game in any capacity, and then when we found out we did, we were like, can we please have James back on? And we were like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
And here we are.
It was kind of wild because you had emailed the other homeboy of Mega Cat. What's his name?
Oh, you're talking about Meowface.
Yes, Meowface. Yes. And I think it was more for a general, hey, let's get you guys back on the show. It's, you know, on a later date for some other reason. But then I saw on your Twitter feed that this game was being handled by you for the Switch. I was like, wait, I played this game at PAX East last year. And
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry to cut you off, but you're cutting out the best part of this whole story.
Which is what?
The reason why I was even talking to them is because I received a general PR blast about Haunted Halloween 86, parentheses, The Curse of the Possum Hollow, and Creepy Brawlers. Okay.
Right.
They're officially being released, yada, yada, and there was going to be some physical additions or something. Yes. Want to do an unboxing, question mark? I have 10 physical press copies left, and I'd be happy to send them out the door today. To the scariest reply that I see. That was it. All you had to do was write a scary reply. So, I told a scary story. And it was a story, I don't know if you want me to tell you the story, but it was essentially a story about a ghost that lived in my parents' house that I have not seen in many, many years. But, and I just sent it because I honestly didn't know who was sending these emails, because it came from like one of those, it's Sir Meowface at Mega, you know, whatever. So I'm like, okay, could that be James? Just his like alter ego? Who the fuck knows? So I was just like, all right, I'm going to reply. I'm going to have fun with this thing. I'm going to tell my little ghost story. And in like 15 minutes, it's like, that's awesome. You win. I'm like, oh, okay. And then he responded, do you want to link up for the podcast? So he knew that we did the podcast, but it wasn't even you. So I'm like, who is this person? Do I know them? Did I meet him? Did I hug him at PAX? I don't know who this is.
Right.
You did meet him at PAX.
Right. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I think I did. I don't know. So I actually went through the back channels. I found his Twitch and I was like, that guy looks really familiar. I'm pretty sure I hugged him at PAX. And then he was like, all right, well, and then I looped Andy in, and then Andy also thought he was talking to you for
right.
at least two
See,
emails.
Now, on my perspective, I just got an email with yourself and Sir Meowface.
Yes.
I was like, let's look up. And I'm like, what? There's no context. There's no email body. It was just, let's do a thing, bro. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess we're talking to James again for some weird reason. So then on the email thread, he mentioned wanting to be chained to me for some, I don't know why you said that. I want to be chained to Andy.
Get a chain going. Because yeah. We were talking about getting a chain email going.
So,
and he said, chain me to Andy.
Yeah. Like, so as we're talking, I realized that this Haunted game was being handled by you guys. I was like, oh, wait, let's talk about this game like this weekend. And then they go, oh, yeah, let me just loop in James. And I'm like, fuck, this isn't James the whole time? Who are we talking to?
Yeah, so that was our fun little way to get this interview again and link up. So yeah, I thought that was hilarious. So yeah, talk to us, man. Talk to us about this Haunted 86.
So the guys at Retrotainment that created Haunted are that also in Pittsburgh, so we share a city, and we've been collaborating for the last like year and a half or so we ported Haunted for them to Xbox One also last year.
Cool.
And I kind of, you know, have some big picture goals that crossed over pretty well, and something we've been working on together. that we're just now announcing is, you know, we have the ability to release NES games on Switch. So this past week when we released Creepy Brawlers and Haunted, that was our final kind of like formal check it out world. We have some NES stuff coming down hot because now we can take all of our physical retro cartridges and selectively take the ones that people love the most and are requesting and then bring it to a digital medium.
So what goes into something like that? Like what were the challenges? Why didn't you do this up till this point?
Yeah, well, I guess there's one really giant challenge. So the first one really is that, you know, getting through console certification, you can't use like an emulator. You can imagine that Nintendo doesn't very favorably look upon custom emulators, you know? So we found some really unique ways to work around it and create like this kind of really, really unique custom way that works within all the confines of console certification for us to still have a perfectly emulated, like 1080p upscaled version that plays on the Switch. You know, it plays with the NES online controllers. So anyone that wants to have
that's awesome.
One step away from like your NES and take them on the go, you know, you don't have to chalk out $50 for a Creepy Brawlers cartridge anymore. You can spend $4.99 and get it on Switch.
That's awesome.
So we have some super, super cool projects on the horizon that are kind of built around this. So this was our kind of test run. Check it out and make sure it works and feels the way we want it to before we start inviting a lot of our other friends and partners in.
Cool. So what is Haunted 86?
So Haunted 86 is a brawler. It's actually the sequel to 85. I don't know if you guys have seen the sequel, I mean the prequel to it also.
I have.
It has its own unique, you know, Possum Hollow world. There's a lot of unique zombie head tossing and kicking mechanics that I think are worth checking out. And, you know, it has just all the things that I like in an 8-bit beat-em-up. You know, it has good feedback, nice, fluid, tight momentum. It's built from the ground up in assembly. Excellent soundtrack. And I think in general, you know, one of the goals we have for the like Switch standard of what makes a game for the NES like digital ready, it's something that, you know, the fans love. It gets some good traction and gets people excited and has a high enough commercial value that it doesn't feel like homebrew. It feels more like a commercial quality game that could have been released in that era. So Haunted Halloween definitely has that standard. And with the partnership we have with Retrotainment, we figured it was a great way for both of us to release something Halloween themed that fans have loved and picked up alongside Creepy Brawlers.
Hell yeah. How did that relationship start with Retro?
Well, I guess there's probably 200 people that make like new NES games, but there's probably only let's say like 10 that do it in a super active and super kind of hands-on, really meticulous way. And the guys at Retrotainment are one of them, and they just happen to be in the same city as us. So you basically can't, you know, we set up at a lot of free play events. I think you guys know that we do a ton of, you know, pausing the pavement, trade show, exhibits, Comic-Cons, free plays. We will set up our CRTs and NES games at underwear bike ride after parties and restaurants, rib fest. It doesn't matter. We will bring the heat and the games that we played. So it's pretty hard to go too far away in Pittsburgh without running into somebody that's asking about Mega Cat when it comes to retro stuff. And just the same, I've had, you know, people after Haunted Halloween came out say, hey, are you guys, you know, involved with the game with the guys that have the P on their head? And they have like a kind of like a faux Pirates logo. And, you know, one thing led to another. And I said, you know, why don't we look at how we can help each other with things like if we're both shipping international orders, why don't we buy shells together? You know, why don't we help each other with trade shows? Why don't we help each other with some of these bigger events, you know, to kind of bring a greater overall presence of high quality retro to everybody else. And, you know, their strengths were really complementary to ours. So they have a super dedicated, really lean team. They don't have any digital expertise. So it was a perfect fit for us to help them kind of push forward in that regard while taking something that was really well executed on the NES and bring it to a bigger audience.
Is that a game based on R. Kelly? Is it P on their head?
I'm sure there's some lore built around that, but I can't confirm or deny.
So you guys worked on the Switch port for Haunted. What was that like, getting that over to the Switch console?
But to speak to the R. Kelly thing, I like imagining there's like a Vectrex level, like transparent, like adhesive decal that was super limited, one of one for Andy. And he's like, finally, my moment. I'm like, no one's ever going to believe you, Andy. We never made this. And then.
But you totally fucking did.
All of Andy's TV just covered with
We really, really missed you, James. Really fucking missed you.
Okay, so beyond the R. Kelly question, what was the? we did.
The Switch.
Yeah. Yes, we sure did. We did the Switch port.
So, what was that process like for you guys? You've worked on Coffee Crisis, obviously. Getting that on the was it easier for you guys, or because you've done it before?
There were actually several dozen hiccups this time, because this is a new process. It wasn't just the normal steps of getting a Unity game through certification. It was, you know, this is our first NES release, was Haunted and Creepy, as a simultaneous submit to lot check and schedule a final and formal release. So a couple other stepping stones along the way. And since we knew we wanted to have these both released before Halloween, we didn't really have the same amount of time we normally would have dedicated to marketing and outreach. And you might notice from the press release this time that somebody actually on their team put together a more professional and longer kind of traditional press release. I'm more likely to ask people like how spooky they are that day, or to send a scary story. But you know, I think that the final numbers speak for themselves. Like we have a ton of our fans of NES cartridges on our email list, on our social, messaging us and kind of thanking us to give them a lower cost and digital option for their Switch. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to take some of these really big long-term projects and then have a new way to distribute them and share them with people that don't have an NES in the living room like they need.
Do you see yourselves scaling back or limiting your physical cartridge releases and focus more on having the games on the digital platform first? How has it impacted your day-to-day, like, you know, ethos at Mega Studios?
Yeah, so we're always really focused on, a game first and then like the medium second. So if you look at like Coffee Crisis, there's a Genesis version and there's the PC version that came out on Switch and Xbox One, and Logjammer, same thing. Medusa, you know, we have a Switch version on deck that's coming out soon for that that's finished.
Yeah,
that's
baby.
Exclusive four player, really ridiculous multiplayer that I think you guys would like to, you know, give it a go with. But the
that's your game, Steven. It's Kickle Cubicle.
I know.
That's what it is, baby.
So exciting.
But like the you know, basically our focus is always the game first. We're trying to get into a system where any game that we're creating as our own IP and our own project, there's a retro version, whether it's a remake or a prequel, or if it's a fully separate title that's in that game's universe. You know, we've been setting that as a standard. So the order doesn't always matter. You know, we kind of just let the games go through all the different steps they need to meet our final quality standard for that platform, and then release them in whatever order that ends up in. So like Bite the Bullet, which has been what we've been working on for like 2 years, the PC version of that will finally get released this February, and the Genesis prequel is going to be done at like the same time. we might just release them together, you know, and kind of tap into that whole food buffet kind of theme. But our priorities are still the same. We're working on the the game first, and then the platform is a piece of that. Definitely a big consideration, but it's still second. The ability to take an NES game and release it digitally in a complimentary way only makes it more likely that we're going to dive even deeper into the retro stuff.
I love it.
Nice.
I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I always thought it was a, like the way you guys kind of present yourselves, it was like, this is, we can't make these at a massive scale so that, you know, for consumers, but it's really for collectors, but we want consumers to play it. So it's kind of like you were stuck in that little middle ground. And if these things keep coming out as they have been on, you know, digital platforms, I think that's really going to help you guys really expand everything a lot quicker.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty excited about it. This was a like a multi-year effort to get to this step we're in right now, and that I wish I could just fully disclose all the super awesome things we have on the horizon, but the craziest efforts of the last several years are all coming to a head right now for us. And between now and the first quarter next year, we have three super crazy, super awesome surprises you guys are going to love.
Awesome.
Oh, dear God. So you guys recently put up a blog post about like retro horror games, whereas I totally was, you know, fully erect whilst reading it. It's like I love all these games. Would you, if you had a chance to work with an IP like a Halloween or a Chainsaw Massacre, would you do like a retro horror game, like an 8-bit horror game based on the classic slasher franchise?
Okay, so I have so many things to say about this, but let me just start with one of my life goals is to do a Killer Clowns from Outer Space
game. Oh my God!
Yes. Okay.
And I can tell you that I was just finishing something on the legitimate side last week, that vying for that to be a reality for us in 2020.
Jesus fucking Christ. That is the best news I've heard in my entire life.
There's some studio somewhere that has the rights to that, or just like, are you sure that's what you want to do? That's the one you want to make?
It's MGM, and we have a great relationship with someone there that's already kind of open to the idea of how we would handle this, and with the way we handle IP, and it's led into a really cool kind of opportunity with how they're managing these IPs. And really, if I could choose just one horror IP, I would choose that. But then right behind that, Freddy, just because Freddy's hilarious. But the challenge, of course, with Freddy is there are some people that love that Friday the 13th game and some people that don't. I'd hate to take something that already has like a significant fan base and just spoil it with all my cat sauce.
Wait, you mean Nightmare on Elm Street? You said Freddy.
Yeah.
Or do you mean Jason?
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, it's like, okay. You know, I was thinking of the Freddy vs. Jason ROM hack.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of ad.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's all right. It's just a simple, like, you know, sprite swap. Nothing major. But I think Freddy needs a decent video game outing because that's his only one on the Nintendo, which is missing from your list, by the way.
Well, I feel like that was like a no-brainer for people. Like, I feel like that's what people think of first, right? Monster Party, and then Friday the 13th, and it's like, I don't know if anyone really loved those games now. I think that might be some of those, like, rose-colored glasses. Monster Party is amazing.
Oh, I still love those games, without a doubt.
But, you know, my personal favorite from that era is, Splatterhouse. So, specifically Splatterhouse 2 I had. So a little bit of personal nostalgia for it. I remember that I traded like a couple like bootleg Dr. Dre tapes for it. And one of my best trades, you know. It was like a couple Dr. Dre tapes and like some of those what are those necklaces called? The Hold Your Keys. It's
like, oh my God. I have the kitten in my hands.
It was like a small collection of those.
The newest member of the family. I don't. You can see him on the video, but he's got a sneeze. He's been sneezing like crazy. I'm gonna
put him down. You brought a tiny cat for Mega Cat.
Yes, I did. I'm trying to get him. He's been hiding a lot, so I told my wife. I just texted her because I heard him sneezing in the bedroom. I was like, just bring him out here. Let him walk around a little bit.
So you guys have big plans for 2020. That's.
This podcast is ridiculous.
Yeah,
what happens to this show?
It always is.
You know what it is like we had a. Most big projects, they take they're a multi-year effort, right? They're like over a year, and we have a ton of work that we started in 2018 and 2019 that's finally coming to a head. And if it wasn't for like the seasonality, if we had just a few more weeks in the year, we'd be really releasing them now. Like I have some really cool stuff that we've been working our butts off on for the last year, 2 years, that are finally at the end of balancing and testing. And then aside from that, you know, that they've opened up some other really unique opportunities on the creative side. And then as we've continued to grow in what I think is like a less cool but more sustainable fashion, which is just really executing on contract work, that allowed us to keep taking bigger risks of our own projects and really commit to them in the way that we've always wanted to. So like,
can I ask?
Yeah.
Can I ask what have been the most successful for you? Like as far as commercially, has it been the contract work or has it been your own
creations. You know, it's really I've had our best contract work be right in line with our best releases. It's really what makes them different is that the contract work is super predictable, and you know a game will keep selling for years with different sales and bundles and packages and platforms. And I would say that the goal for any studio, well, not any, but most studios, is to be working 95% or more on their own IP. And that's where we're going to be next year. So it's been a long multi-year effort to get to the point where we can make our products and our games our full focus and not be as actively, like, not interrupted, because we certainly appreciate, like, the sustainability and structure that contract work provides. But that's allowed us to grow and still, like, minimize some of the risk that makes it really challenging for any indie team.
All right, so Creepy Brawlers. Tell us about that.
So Creepy Brawlers takes everything I love about Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, and it adds in some kind of new-gen game design with some enemy evolutions where you actually transform into different enemies while you're battling them, a pretty full-featured achievement system, and then an aesthetic that I just love, which is classic movie monsters.
Mm.
So if you haven't given it a good go-through yet, I highly recommend the Alien Taunt and then the Wolfman, just how he lives his life. I think it's something you can relate to.
Excellent. And are they out now? They're coming. Like, what was the
So
the date
Creepy
for those?
And Haunted are officially live as of last Friday. So
awesome.
Creepy Brawlers is actually one of our top five all-time selling games, and it's really interesting because, you know, something I've been able to watch with Tyson fans and Punch-Out fans is that there's this entire world of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out fans that are super diehards, actually hate playing the game. They're like highly nostalgic for it, and they buy it and they put it in. And I watch them sitting there at conventions just like cussing and throwing the controller down and shaking their head in dismay. But it's like it's one of those games that there really isn't anything like it. Like, I don't know how many Tyson likes come to mind, but you know, when you think of Punch-Out, there's really just Punch-Out. So this gives a new challenge for people that are a big fan of that. And then I can't say it anymore. I just love movie monsters. I wish I could just hang out with them.
Who's your favorite?
Do I have to pick one?
I mean,
top three.
So I like the rock star status the vampires have. You know, I think that's something that we can all agree with. They kind of have this like elevated, kind of pompous arrogance to them that makes them kind of humorous. Like, I have to imagine the vampires kind of looking down on the Wolfman in the locker room, like, this guy, you know? And then, you know, we don't have him featured purposely because he's a little more of color commentary, but there's something classic about a mummy because he's basically a human super fan that decided to come back and just, like, he loved the monsters too, you know? And that's relatable to me. And then, you know, I love aliens. We talked about this during Coffee Crisis, and there's a very sassy alien that kind of lightly taunts you by bending over and slapping his bum. But he's your first warm-up character. He's full of really unique kind of, I want to say, like, flavor animations. That alien really comes to life on your screen.
So I this is for my own brain. Okay, because I have the Sega Genesis copy of Coffee Crisis, but I haven't played that yet because I don't have a power adapter for my Genesis. But I have played the Switch version. Were you able to get that many sprites on screen for the Genesis version? Because I cannot even imagine a Genesis running.
Short answer is definitely not.
Okay, because I was getting my ass kicked. I'm like, there are like 40 guys on the screen. What the hell am I doing?
So the key in that game is to follow the instructions and utilize the grabs on the Switch version to throw them into the edges because it carves the health down with a multiplier. Just pro tip on it. But so we made the Genesis version first. And as we were making it, we were having so much fun like iterating on it. We're like, man, imagine if we did a really like high feedback, really fun beat 'em up for a PC that didn't have these limitations. And then we were able to double the sprite count on the enemies and double the number of levels. And we added the modifier system to kind of keep gameplay fresh, and lots of different aliens, because I have a whole sickness with that. But so there's definitely less sprites per screen on Genesis, because the game can't keep that same frame rate up. It would be too much sprite blinking that I think decreases the quality of the total experience for people.
Looking at you, Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, I think that sprite flickering can be like nostalgic in a positive way, but one of the hurdles we always have to overcome is that we want to make games by collectors for collectors, but, you know, we want to make them in a way that we can take bigger risks and you know, make bigger projects. That means we have to make games that kind of meet our standard and hopefully sometimes bleed outside into like more casual retro fans.
Sure.
And know that the casual retro fans do not like sprite flickering, that they bring it up constantly.
It always happens in the same spots in those games too. It's always like, oh, here comes the billboard people and there's the flicker. And yeah. Yep. I know it all too well. I want to get that retro or the whatever. What's the name of it? The one-up cabinet? That it's the 1/3 scale. It's got the two arcade games, the two turtle arcade games. I'm very excited for that. What else? What do you want? Andy, do you have any final questions for this segment?
Yeah, I want James to tell me all the things he's working on. he's making that Freddy game. I know it. Fucking know it.
Tell us all your secrets, James. But okay, yeah. So they're out now. Go grab them. Haunted Halloween 86. Creepy Brawlers, and really, I mean, if you want a beat 'em up that's going to challenge the hell out of you, I still recommend Coffee Crisis.
Yeah, anything with the Mega Cat Studios logo or branding on it is just gold. So invest in their shit. They make awesome shit.
Do it. All right. So we actually have quite a Nintendo news report here, and that's mainly because Andy and I both made a doc not knowing each other were making a doc, and neither of us picked the same news. Go figure.
Very organized on this podcast.
We are very organized on this podcast. All right, so Andy.
Yes?
Please tell us about the first story here, because this is one of your stories. Get us right into the Nintendo News Report.
Right, so Blaster Master 02. Which is a sequel to a prequel. That's not confusing at all. Is getting new DLC in the form of Copen, who is from the Gun Vault Chronicles series. And the trailer looks fucking phenomenal. It makes me mad because you can easily make a retro game from an old IP. It could look and play beautifully, and it would sell a buttload of copies, and I'd be happy with that. There's so many IPs that Nintendo just sits on, does nothing with. Kid Icarus, Star Tropics. Just have these guys do it for you. It integrates. You're making Blaster Master Zero over there. When you're done with that, make this Kid Icarus game. Pay a little bit of money, and you can do all the work. Is that terrible?
Yeah.
Is that so hard to do?
I don't think so.
Right?
I mean, man, we know that the Switch is a great place for everything because it's just hitting milestones like crazy.
And they speaking would of, eat it up, yes.
And speaking of, that's our second news story. Shit, okay. Well, North American Switch sales have already surpassed lifetime world sales of the Wii U. So that's insane. The company announced on Thursday. This is coming from TechCrunch.com, and actually Maltese is the one that sent me this story. So this is the first place that I heard this news. The company announced Thursday that they sold 15 million units of the popular handheld console. They're calling it a handheld console. It's funny. In North America, further noting that the Switch had been the most popular console in the U.S. for 10 months in a row, according to the NPD Group. This number brings North America's specific sales well past the 13.56 million units of the company's previous generation console, the Wii U. While the Switch lags behind the PS4 and Xbox One in lifetime sales, it's important to realize how old those other systems are. Hardware refreshes aside, the Xbox One and PS, yeah, blah, blah, blah. They are a stone's throw away from getting the Xbox One numbers.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's incredible.
Even on a weekly basis, the Switch sells about 250,000 globally, Which, as a fun side to that bit of information, the PS4 sells about roughly 40,000 units less on a weekly, which is not bad, given that it's a six-year-old console, and the Xbox One sells about maybe 50 to 55,000 weekly on the global scale. Oh, and a fun fact, the PS Vita sold a whopping 39 units this week.
Hell yeah. I bet there's some Mega Cat games on there, no? James? I don't know.
Well, actually, we were really close to porting Coffee Crisis there.
Oh my god.
I mean, not to like totally derail everything, but we had a publisher reach out to us that specializes in that. And, you know, they've been looking for beat-em-ups. So the only reason we didn't do it was it would have required a little more time from the dev that was working on it, and it would have been worth it for us at the time. But I'm not a Vita owner, so it's hard for me to relate to it, but I definitely appreciate consoles that don't get enough love.
The Vita is a beautiful thing. But speaking of the Wii U, this, and the Wii for that matter, this is a really interesting story that I found here on Nintendo Everything. So this is an on-stage interview. Oh, it's a lecture. It was a lecture and speech that Reggie Fils-Aimé did recently at Cornell. This happened on the 21st of the month. So it's about a week old by now, but it was really interesting. So here are a few of the tidbits here. Reggie once chatted with the person who engineered the NES to ask him its main goal, which the main goal apparently was to play a good game of Donkey Kong. That was the reason why they made the Nintendo Entertainment System. He outright called the Wii U a failure. I want to find the big one here was that who was it? Iwata did not want to include Wii Sports in the pack-in for the original Wii, and Reggie was the one that pushed for it in the States, in North America, for the Wii's release. I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we know that that Reggie always fought hard for the United States, but he knew that this market needed that one really niche, or like one game that everybody could play, and that's the one. That is the one that everybody's grandma does Wii bowling. You know what I mean? Like, that was the one to really grab hold, and you could arguably say that if that game was not packed in with the Wii in the United States, Nintendo might not have ever put out games like Wii Sports Resort or Wii Fitness or, you know, Wii whatever it was. Those other things that have sold millions of copies might not have also been sold. Andy, what are your thoughts?
I have no thoughts on that whatsoever.
No, huh?
None.
Nothing?
Not really. Wow. No. Seriously, what would they have packaged otherwise? Besides
nothing.
It sounds like, how would you do that? I mean, you're trying to pitch a new form of playing video games with motion control being like the crux of the console itself. To have nothing in the package seems kind of foolish. Like, it seems like there shouldn't have been even a talking point or a debate at Nintendo. It should have taken...
It didn't have it in Japan.
Right, but it seems kind of weird to me that it went that route in Japan. But, I mean, it didn't stop the success of the Wii. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird to me.
James, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the cool part about the Wii, like everything else aside, the gaming piece is the accessibility and excitement for the average player. And that all came from Wii Sports and Wii Bowling. You know, people are buying them for office parties and they're being set up for like nightlife places. And, you know, it was definitely like more of a culture movement, right? Like there's nothing nothing else like that in that era. And I think that's a big part of the Nintendo's recipe, is being innovative on the hardware side and then being, you know, pretty consistent with taking their good IP and then making good games built around it.
100%. And speaking of good IPs, Andy, take this next story.
Oh, this is it's one of those, hey, if you want to see more of this game on the system you have, just buy more of it, I guess. So Street Fighter, this comes from NintendoLife.com. Street Fighter producer was interviewed, Yoshinori Ono, at EGX 2019, and they asked about bringing the fourth or fifth Street Fighter game to the Switch, and he said, "You can go over to the Nintendo booth and maybe just like shout that out at the VPs, sorry, the VIPs in the backstage, because they're the ones you really need to talk to, not me." Which I think kind of translates to support the franchise on the Switch in a sense, because that's always the case when you hear about getting sequels to games you like or more of a franchise you like. There's always that caveat, like, oh, if we get a good response from this game, we might see more of it. Like Shenmue 3, we had the whole, there might be a Shenmue 4 if this one sells a lot, so just buy it and you'll get more of it. But we haven't had a Street Fighter game on the Switch since, I think it was, what was it, the Ultra Street Fighter 2?
There was the anniversary collection. There was the massive collection thing, and then there was the, and then they re-released, like, 2? Like, it was 2 with, like, the 3 different versions of 2? I don't know. They're weird.
I mean,
they're really weird when it comes to Street Fighter.
You have 2 of their main players in Smash, and Guile's an assist trophy, also in Smash.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, there's interest. You know, those who own Switch and Smash, even the younger crowd, they know what Street Fighter is. Yeah, and they have all the.
I really like Street Fighter 4.
All the older games. It's a lot better than 5. That's for sure. 5 launched in a very abysmal state.
Yeah, I don't know why they launched that.
Yeah, that should have been no. Shouldn't have done that.
That should have been a no for me, dog. Right? Is Randy Jackson still
alive?
Is he still relevant?
Is he still alive?
No, he's still relevant.
I don't think so.
Relevant.
I don't think so.
All right, so getting into, there's 2 more stories here. Really quickly, some Pokemon Sword and Shield news came out. This is on Games Radar. The Wild area, which is that area where you connect to your friends and you can do raids and you can find wild Pokemon running around, apparently that offers a, quote, constantly connected, end quote, online multiplayer. So here's the quote here. It's constantly connected in the background, so you've got this kind of huge, really pretty open space, explains Masuda-san. But actually, within that, it's constantly connected in the background, so you could either see local players, if you've connected locally, appearing in your game, or if you're connected online, you could see players from around the world appearing in your game. And then there's a little summation here that basically means that the wild area will function a bit like the tower in Destiny 2, which is kind of like your world hub, in that you'll be able to wander around with your fellow trainers, admire their characters and all their personalized glory and more. It'll hopefully make Galar feel alive. So I thought that was interesting because that was one of the modes that they showed that was actually probably the most intriguing from this, was that you can join with 3 friends and you can take on powerful raid Pokemon and you know, explore together and all that stuff. And it's interesting now that it's going to probably be always online. So maybe that's an area where you can't just go around and explore and find wild Pokemon to, like, throw your balls at, you know?
Is it going to have, like, your name on top of your head, like an MMO?
Probably.
So if I pull,
Or your friend code?
Oh, God. It's a string of numbers.
Oh, hey, SW6843DH946H2. There you are, man.
I wonder if they'll have, like, emotes or dances or shit like that to make it seem, like, interesting. I don't know. It's funky. And this is the full camera control, too, right, in this particular part of the game?
Yeah, this is, yep.
Mm-hmm. You can't do that in the main game.
They're essentially, we don't know that.
No, I thought that was confirmed.
No, it wasn't confirmed. Oh. That was nonsense. That wasn't confirmed. It was just that was the only one where they showed, they didn't say, hey, look, you could do 360. It was like they were just doing it. So people were like, well, why aren't they showing us just doing that in the other mode? But it's not like they purposefully or confirmed or denied that it's not, you don't have camera control in the other mode. But it looks like in the, you know, the main game, but it looks like you would. I mean, the camera seems to like move in different angles, but I don't know. Maybe it's different fixed angles. I don't know. I think we should have a Pokemon-like game with all of the Mega Cat catalog, all of the characters from the Mega Cat lineup are the creatures that you catch. And you make them fight and breed. And you call it Mega Cattleman.
So you had, I think it's not a bad idea. I mean, it's pretty cohesive of a universe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All these weird monsters, like, wait, you got that meat creature. I mean, come on.
That's how you get the lore. So Medusa fucks the meat, and that breeds the aliens in Coffee Crisis.
Boom.
So this goes full circle.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I don't think you could. That would make the aliens of this Earth, though. That's the problem.
Well, there's always a way around it, right?
There and, is. There's where there's
related to that,
as Jeff Goldblum says.
Every game we've created successively actually folds in our previous games into like billboards, NPCs, that kind of stuff. We always try to make them fit into the world a little more cohesively. But even games we haven't even gotten to release, if they started in time, we try to find a way to bring that cat verse into the next project.
See that, Andy? You make fun, but there it is.
I was being totally serious. That was a legit pitch.
The final story here is something that's right up James's alley, but we have two physical editions of some really fun video games for the Switch. We have Battle Princess Madeline is getting a physical release. It's getting it across PS4. And Switch, that's coming from Limited Run Games. Looks really sleek, really sexy. But also, Bubble Bobble for Friends is getting a massive, massive collector's edition, physical collector's edition. I mean, this thing comes with obviously the cover of the game, which is numbered, so I guess it's super high, collector. High quality collector's box, magnetic closure, original soundtrack, the hardcover book with all sorts of different facts and art, two sheets with a stylistic marquee and artwork stickers, Bubble Bobble instruction card, love that, Bubble Bobble arcade flyer, and Bubble Bobble for Friends box. So it's pretty big, and it looks really cool. It reminds me of the Toe Jam and Earl one a little bit.
Yeah, I want this.
Yeah, I want it too.
I want to see. I actually want to see if it's sold out right now while we're on the podcast. If not, I will buy it right now.
I was trying to get them on the show, because that's actually coming from that's not from Limited Run Games, that is from
Strictly Limited Games.
Strictly Limited, yes. And they liked the tweet where I was like, "Oh my god, look at this!" And then I replied saying, "You know, you could send it to us. We could do an unboxing, and you could also be on the show." But I digress.
Oh, the pre-order started today. Of this recording.
Oh, of this recording.
But
so.
Is it? Can I do anything? I don't see anything. I don't see a button here. I don't know. Is it over? Oh my God. Sold out already? I can't click on shit. Hold on. Is it real? Can I buy things? Oh my God.
Well, Andy figures out if he could buy things.
Oh my God. Hold on. I think it's happening.
Oh God. Something's happening.
Wait. This is it.
Oh God. He's doing it.
Okay. I'm buying it right now. All right.
All right. Well, you buy it. I'm taking us into the hype zone, James, because this one is a doozy. James, what would you buy for $195,000?
I'd buy enough copies of Bubble Bobble 4 limited edition that Michael Mahari could just get them out to all of his friends and family, neighborhood acquaintances.
Well, would you buy, and I'm just throwing this out here, would you buy a 1998 Japanese promo card of Illustrator Pikachu in mint, PSA graded mint 9 condition?
So that's ridiculous, because you know I would.
One of the rarest Pokemon cards in existence went up for auction last week in New York and sold for $195,000. It is now officially the most expensive Pokemon card in existence. It is a Pikachu Illustrator card, a promo card given out to the winners of a comic contest that was held in Japan in 1997 and 1998. There were only 39 of these cards awarded, and it's believed that only 10 are left today, making each one of them insanely, insanely valuable. So that is our hype zone, because holy shit, that is a lot of money for a Pokemon card.
Yeah, that's crazy. Anytime I think about like fantasy levels of money and like things like that, I guess I don't know at what point you start buying $200,000 Pikachu cards, but I feel like it wouldn't be that far away.
I mean, if I had like blank check, if it was, if the movie blank check was me, that the gajillionaire that I was stealing money from would be bankrupt. There's no doubt in my mind. If I had an if I had no limit, if there was no, if I, oh my God, I would buy everything. I, there is not one thing I wouldn't try and buy on this earth, except, you know, like a person, because I'm not gonna be like that. But I would definitely buy an island.
Imagine having so much fuck you money you can just buy a single trading card for $200,000.
Well, don't get crazy. It wasn't $200,000,
$195,000. All right. Do you just wipe your ass with $100 bills?
We're assuming it's one person and not like a collective group of people or like an organization.
That,
or,
that sounds
or
like
a small country primarily populated by electric mice.
Right.
We could feed our people or we can own this card.
That shall be the Holy Grail. It sits there on top of the little thing.
And that's how you get tourists.
I was just going to say, that... it's actually like the best strategy play for like renovating tourism, becoming the new like real true peak epicenter of the world.
Hell yeah. Do the Pikachu Museum and have this one closed off room where it's like roped off, and just in the center is that that Pikachu Illustrator card, with and the whole room is just white, and it's just a light shining down, just blinding you, just so you could see that beautiful, magnificent. It's not even a PSA grade 10. That's the funny thing. It's not even a perfect card. What does a PSA 10 get? $250,000?
He's holding what appears to be a dildo and a French tickler.
Correct. I would think that might be an accurate description. You know what? I'm gonna put the
Why is Charmander back there too? That's kind of weird.
Is it?
Yeah, you don't see him back there hanging out.
Yeah, but they go everywhere together. They're buds.
Oh, they're butt buddies.
Correct. See, you're getting it now.
I am totally getting it.
Oh, I bet you are. Okay. Before we get into the very final section of this episode, which is the Retro Game Club, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this week's sponsor, which, of course, is Melted Pins. Melted Pins is a fantastic, fantastic website that sells unique and original tattoo art-inspired pins, buttons, and much, much more. If you watch the cold open of this video on or any of our streams or any of the other YouTube videos that we make, I have the pin... nap time pin right there on my microphone. It's stabbed right into the little plushiness of my microphone, and I love it very, very much. And artist Kelsey Lynn, she's done art for this show before. She's done art for tons of websites and podcasts, and she's done stuff for Kind of Funny. She is just an awesome, really, really fun artist. Like, her art is just a blast to look at. And of course, if you want to go buy something, you get a code and you get some money off on that thing. So if you go to meltedpins.com and you use the checkout code NDSMelted, that's NDSMelted, you get 10% off of your purchase. 10%! It's so easy! A caveman can do it. Damn it, no, that's a different... No, we can't use that. That's copyright. Anyway, that's meltedpins.com. Promo code NDSMelted, and you can follow Melted Pins on all social media at Melted Pins. And now... it's back to our regularly scheduled Retro Game Club. Andy, it's your turn this week.
Yeah, I was so not ready for this. but I have a game. I did find a game.
You did?
Yes, I certainly did.
Excellent.
So James, who's been on the show before, knows how the game works. I hope you recall the rules, James.
I've been practicing.
Oh, you have now? All right, the score, I last check it. Steve, you're down by 11 points. So
correct.
We need a win, buddy. You got to come back.
I do. I need a solid deficit. 8 points here.
Yeah, I think you'll do good. I think James will help you with a strong victory. but I pray the baby takes a dump in his mouth, and that kind of takes him out of the running for a little bit.
So he did just have his 1.5 bowel movement per day. So... should be safe, but there's really no trusting him at this point. I saw my wife put some baby probiotics into the bottle, and that's not good.
No.
It's basically
chemical
warfare.
I love how there's a fraction of the bowel movement. 1.5 movements. There's a half a movement.
I know there that, always is, Andy.
I know what that's like. All right, so clue number one. This game features classic horror movie enemies such as a mummy, zombies, and even the Grim Reaper.
Ooh.
Le Grim Reaper.
Now, he said featured, so they're probably like enemies in the game, probably not characters you play as, right?
They're enemies, I'll clarify. I think I did say enemies, no?
You just said featured.
Okay. Yes, they're enemies. It features enemies that were basically inspired from, you know, vintage old horror movies.
The old classic monster treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. It's got to be on a Nintendo as well. That would have been on Genesis. For some reason, Wolfman came into my head, and I was thinking of like Altered Beast.
You play as monsters in that one.
I know, but you also fight monsters too. It's weird.
True. That could be a clue, like you play as a monster.
All right. Castle Frankenstein.
Castle Frankenstein, that's a great game. One of my favorites.
I need another clue. How about you, James? I think James got pooped on.
I think James says yes.
I'm jogging my mic on, mic off.
That's good. That's all right.
I'll take another clue.
Yeah, let's get another clue, Handsome.
All right. This game also features enemies from Japanese and Greek folklore and mythology, like a Medusa, for example.
I
mean, we're just talking about Monster Party earlier. I feel like this should be like in my soul just pouring out right now.
Kid Icarus had Medusa heads too, and different types of monsters too, right?
Medusa was like the enemy in that game.
Right. Okay. Huh.
Though, yeah, did they change her name in the future games? I think they dropped the whole like Greek mythology aspect after the NES game and the Game Boy game.
What she was in? I don't know.
Oh, there was that weird like demon thing in the Game Boy sequel.
Right.
But yeah, still it was heavily Greek in the first two games. I think they sort of dropped that aspect. I never finished the 3DS game.
Excuse me.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, let's think. Monsters. I don't know. I'm going to get stuck on this Medusa question, on this Medusa clue. That's what's going to end up happening. All right, let's do another clue.
All right, this side-scrolling game, released in the late 80s.
Late 80s, so it's NES.
Correct.
It can't be just, I don't know.
It can't be just what? Can we
just like it can't be just like a simple like Castlevania game or something stupid like that. I feel like that would be too obvious.
I mean,
you are correct.
I mean, it could be
right.
It could be Monster Party, I guess.
I think you should just get out of the Castlevania realm.
No, I know. No, I wasn't really in that. Yeah, it could be Monster Party. I think it's worth a guess because
can I say Monster Party? I think we should just put it out there. I've been I've been vibing with it the whole episode.
I mean, if now it definitely fits the time frame. I'm pretty sure that was the late 80s. Gameplay. I don't remember the gameplay really. Yeah, I think you know what? Why not? Let's go for it. All right, that'll be our first guess. Our first guess is Monster Party.
It is not Monster Party.
Mm. Right in my deuces.
Right in your deuces.
Okay.
All right. Next clue. This game used a password system.
Monster Party did.
What was the plot for Monster Party, Steven?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think you use a baseball bat. That's all I really remember.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really
that game is in batshit crazy. I know that from the JonTron video that I watch when I feel depressed because it's so funny. You fuse with a gargoyle in that game.
That's weird.
And the gargoyle's name is Bert.
Sounds about right. Do you remember that game? And I think it was a toy first. Do you remember Monsters in My Pocket?
Oh yeah,
those like multicolored little freaky monster things. Mm-hmm. They were kind of like muscle men, but they were like monsters or trash can kids, but like little toys. I think they had a game for that too.
Mm-hmm.
All
right, so are we doing next clue, right? Because you already guessed.
God, next clue. Yes.
All right. This game also featured three possible endings, which was odd for a Nintendo game at the time.
Three endings?
Mm-hmm.
So one, you die. One, they die.
Who's they?
The bad guys. Huh. Metroid had multiple endings, I think, right? And there are two endings? Two endings, I think. No. Shit. James, what are you thinking, bud?
I'm so deep on the Monsters in My Pocket reference, I really can't think of anything.
Little Samson?
It's definitely an NES game, and I'm like ashamed to think that I haven't played it. Like, who am I? Like,
yeah, it's right in your alley here.
It's like you just pulled out like my Achilles heel and just stabbed a monster dagger right into it.
What are some games that inspired the games that you make?
For for like just general spookiness, I find just some like, of the best retro spooky to be like Neo Geo and Sega Genesis. I mean, Sega Genesis is a man's console, black, a little modern. It's nice modern.
Has a volume slider.
Exactly. We include Famicom in this game also, right?
Yeah.
Definitely ups the ante for making it challenging.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know, man. All right, give us the next clue.
Okay, this sequel...
It's a sequel. God damn it.
...introduced an experience rating.
Dude, I have no idea what's happening in this.
Let me extend that clue. It's a sequel. And it had a lot of different... The core gameplay was almost identical to its predecessor. But part two did a lot of radical things.
Radical, man!
It's also kind of the black sheep of the franchise.
Could it be Simon's Quest? Could it be Simon's Quest? Could we have done it? I feel like that checks all the boxes, right? When did Simon's Quest come out? That game, I really don't like that game at all. I mean, I feel like all those monsters would be there.
You know, death is the mainstay of the Castlevania franchise.
Yes, and you were trying to get me away from Castlevania.
Oh, that dirty dog.
It was dirty.
So dirty.
Is it Simon's Quest? Is it Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest?
Let me ask you a question before I give you that answer.
Yeah.
If I say no to that, to that answer, where are you going to go from there?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Because imagine what other game could it possibly be?
I don't know. I just feel like that's too on the nose for
now.
For you.
Let me ask you this.
Okay. That's like me giving a Ninja Turtle game for the fifth time.
Right. So let me ask you this. So let's say it's not Simon's Quest. Ugh. Could you imagine a game out there that would tick as many boxes as Simon's Quest would?
No, I don't think so.
The answer is Simon's Quest.
I feel like we were deliberately led astray.
We were. Castlevania, Simon's Quest. What was that, 5 points, 6 points? How many clues you give me? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. 6 points.
Take your 6 points. You are getting back in the game. You're five points away.
I'll take it.
The year is going to be over soon, dude. You got a few more weeks to go.
I know. It's scary.
It's very scary. Like this whole month.
I don't want to throw anything upside down, but I feel like there could be a good 2020 revision to the rules that if all the boxes are checked for something else, that you get if they're all consecutively perfectly in alignment, you get some kind of percentage point or some kind of wild card.
Or you get a steal.
Yeah.
You get steal points.
You know what?
Earned, whenever you get three clues, four clues, and all four consecutively are accurate. Because the first two, it shouldn't really count for anything because it's just top of the funnel.
I do think we should revisit the Retro Game Club. It's just the rules, the structure, because I did get some feedback recently from some listeners that's kind of lost. It's kind of a shell of its former glory. It was an exact quote.
Well, we've definitely started scraping the bottom of the barrel.
We have. And I think,
we've been doing this for 100 episodes.
I think back in the day, this whole thing was to talk about old games mainly and to actually go back and play them once upon a time. Before we had guests on the show.
No, well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. The segment is cut from the show. You heard it here first.
Because one person said they didn't like it.
Yes, it's gone.
Not that they didn't like it. They just
one
wanted...
person didn't like it. That is a high percentage of our audience.
We need
Andy.
To shut up.
Speaking of shutting up, that brings us to the end.
Yes.
Of the podcast. It's been an absolute hoot hanging out with you guys again. I like the three of us. We need to do this more often. Just anything, really. We just need to hang out. Which I know is going to be infinitely harder for you now, James, now that you got that little one. I'm
PAX
very
East,
happy for you.
I was going to bring my NDS swag and make sure I'm ready to cat you guys up, too.
Oh, my God.
Hell,
I'm so excited about that.
Hell, yeah. Oh, speaking of swag, that could be part of our little housekeeping here. Ladies and gentlemen, we now have a Teespring account with a couple of items up there. If you're interested in buying some stuff, I'm going to put the link in the description of the show, but it's basically just teespring.com/NDS podcast, teespring.com/NDS podcast. We got a couple of things and I made them as cheap as as the website will allow me to make any profit. Cause it wasn't really about the money for us. It's just, we want people to have a place to buy some stuff. So check out teespring.com/NDS podcast. I think that's the link. If it doesn't work, don't worry. I'll put the correct link in the show description. Actually, you know what? I can just check it right now. Fuck it. Teespring.com. Yep, that's the one. Teespring.com/NDS podcast. We have a t-shirt, a hoodie, and a mug up right now, but there'll be more stuff. So, yes, that is going to do it for this episode. Remember, you could follow us on social media. We are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And James, where do you want everybody to follow you?
MegaCatStudios.com.
There you go. Go to MegaCatStudios.com. You can find all your fancy answers right there. All right. And if you want to join our Facebook group, you could do so at facebook.com/groups/NDS podcast. And you could follow our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. And also you could look up Nintendo Dual Screens on YouTube. We're slowly but steadily climbing to 100 subscribers. So please, if you want to listen to the podcast on YouTube or you want to watch any of our other videos, we like to do a little dual screens first plays. If we get a game that we haven't played yet, we will record ourselves playing the first, you know, moments of the game, whether it's the first level or, you know, in some cases it could be the first hour because that's just how long it takes you to get through the first little chunk. But it's a lot of fun, and you could find that at Nintendo Dual Screens on YouTube. And, you know, that's it. We did it. Andy, do you want to tell anybody before we go and say goodbye to everybody?
Yeah, so we're working hard this month. This whole horror really thing hard. Has been really good for us. A lot Too of much. Our listeners are saying it's amazing what we're doing. So you're getting double of us again this week. Expect more goodness to come out on Wednesday.
Yep.
Oh yeah, baby.
Super top secret double probation episode coming out on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. And then we have
very excited
November's guest sort of like kind of lined up. And we're also kind of, I think we're extending our horror game thing into November. Because, you know, we put a lot of feelers out and then a lot of folks got back late. And I don't like saying no to people. So I was like, oh, yeah, just come on the show. Let's do it. Like, yeah, we'll make it work. Screw it.
We'll figure out an excuse to put it up. It's fine. Everything will be fine.
I don't have kids. Only Steven does.
True. True. James, thank you so much for joining us again. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm so, you know, I enjoy having you on, and I enjoy our friendship, and I appreciate you, and good luck with everything, and you're doing an excellent job at everything. I hear nothing but great things about MegaCat. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, as always. I look forward to sending you guys tons of dog, cat, and baby photos.
Oh my God.
Can't wait.
Amazing. And exciting. And tell Sir Meowface that we're big fans. And
be like, hey, so that they weren't sure if you were like the Meowface they hugged or a different Meowface.
You know what? I would like, you have our address. When we bought shit from you last time, I would like an autographed glamour shot of Meowface from my desk at work.
I can make the request. He's a pretty regal dude, but I have a good feeling, since you guys are inner circle VIP, that whatever you ask him for outside of like DNA, he'll just collect it for you.
That is gonna do it, folks. This has been Nintendo Dual Screens episode 1, 2, 3 for the week of October 28th, 2019. If you like what you heard here, then you're going to love our pre- and post-show shenanigans, which you could get for a small contribution to patreon.com/NDSpodcast. And don't forget, all week we are going to be, or at least I am going to be streaming on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams, raising money for Brooklyn Animal Action, a local shelter here in Brooklyn that helps find capture and clean and vet and make well and adopt cats out to people. And they were wonderful when my cat got sick, and they helped us with our new kitten, and they're just a great group of people. So we're trying to raise money. So if you check us out, we're going to be streaming Cat Quest 2 and Cat Lady pretty much all week until Halloween. And then on November 1st, we're going to donate whatever we have gotten. We're going to donate in one big chunk. So please head over to twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. Until next time, that is it. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, James. And as always, please be excellent to each other.